It is Thursday morning, just after 8:35. We check in at City Hall with the Deputy Mayor's office. It's our good friend Mick Renheisen. Mick, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you guys?
Great.
Started the PGA season this morning as well, as they get started in Napa Valley. Boy, that's a golf and wine. That's not a bad place to get things going.
Oh, beautiful area, that's for sure.
After their two-week off season, they're right back and up and at it. Too bad our friend Tiger Woods had to pull out. That would have been an interesting story, but sounds like his back, his balance, his swing, his everything isn't ready for competition just yet. We have to do the first 30 seconds on golf, Keith.
Well, and don't forget to remind Mick about beware of Thursday the 13th.
It is Thursday the 13th, Mick. We'll probably have to look at a proclamation at some point on that. But
we can help you out with that.
Keith sprung that on me this morning, and I've been terrified since. So the golf season is up and running. Poor Tiger, huh?
Yeah, disappointed, but better that he gets his health back before he gets back in it again.
Yeah, I don't think he can come out and shoot 82-80 and explain it away. I don't think anybody wants to listen to that anymore, sadly. How quickly we forget how wonderfully dominant and good he was, and that's the sad part of it all. The Glass and Mick Renheisen golf program will continue on Saturdays. Just after lunchtime here on WGCL. Now, back to the heavy lifting that we bring you in for every Thursday morning. We've had a very busy week, obviously, in the news. And we'll start down with the protest that took place on Monday evening.
But you got caught in.
I almost got caught in. I saw it developing, and you turned it the other direction and got out of there. I want people to know what it takes to protest legally. And do they have to fill out a form? Do they have to get a permit? Or can these spontaneously happen? And kind of talk us through this process.
Well, they can spontaneously happen. Obviously, we would prefer it if we knew in advance, because then we can plan for and make sure that the environment is safe. And if traffic needs to be diverted, we can divert it in advance. And, you know, anytime we know that there's something that's going to disrupt the normal flow of traffic, that's better for us, and there is a permit process, but it's within everyone's constitutional right to protest. We ask that they do it peacefully, as least disruptively as possible, and with the respect that other people that may or may not believe in their cause also have a right to move about the community in a way that's not disruptive to their lives. So we had a little bit of challenges with that, given that there was no advance notice. There was some social media activity that suggested there might be something happening, but this event kind of happened organically, and that where it started and where it passed through was an unknown to folks at the city and to IU, other than those paying attention to some of the social media information. And I think the good thing is no one got hurt. There were no confrontations. There was one incident where a driver decided to pass through 150 to 200 people. That's not a smart idea, and while you may think you have a right to drive anywhere at any time, I would liken the disruption of a protest to the same thing as if an accident occurred and the police had to divert you somewhere else. You just need to do that and not try to force your way through a site that's not passable by vehicle. So,
what is the city's role in that when it happens or organically, like we mentioned? It didn't sound like, at least in the Herald Times article, that any group was taking responsibility for the diversion of the protest. So these things just happen. What are you going to do with 100, 200 people in the street? With what does the playbook say to do there?
Well, I think we've seen playbooks around the country, some of them ending in events that we don't ever want to have happen here, and thankfully we haven't had happen here. And that's sometimes these event organizers are trying to entice a response. You don't see Bloomington Police and IU Police in full-out battle gear with shields and trying to disrupt any kind of protest activity, and I think that's the approach we would prefer to take, is not to go that direction. So unless public safety is threatened, we're going to take a much less confrontational approach and observe and react accordingly, as opposed to coming out, you know, in a battalion type of arrangement that clearly, in some cases, is what groups want you to do, so they can capture video of that very militaristic view and post it all over the planet. And that's not at all what we believe is the right way to police and enforce things. People have a constitutional right to protest and
assemble and gather. Right, absolutely.
It was largely done politely and respectfully. It just was disruptive for a while, and kind of that's the nature of protests.
And if
disruptive in that it disrupted traffic, not disruptive in that it caused anyone harm, or it was inconvenient for some motorists that were trying to go by that particular part of town at that particular time that the protest occurred.
Exactly right. And if you have issues with it or something happened to you during that, please call the Bloomington Police Department and see if they can help you out. But it is what it is, and I hate that phrase, but we hope that everybody just keeps cooler heads. Yeah, protest, assemble all you want, and get after that. Just, again, be a human being when you do so.
Absolutely. And, you know, I wasn't a part of the generation, and I don't think Keith or I, the older of the three of us on the radio broadcast, can remember the 60s era as well as we might all want to go back to. But there were a lot of protests in and around campus in that area, and even in the 70s. And, you know, we have some of those today, and there's some reasons that those are existing. People are upset, as they should be, about some actions that are happening. Again, I would point out that here we haven't had that. I want to acknowledge the efforts of our law enforcement and public safety folks for not creating an environment that we have seen on the national news. And so there's a reason for that. I think our people are trained well, and they don't try to escalate incidents. They try to de-escalate them, and sometimes simply a uniform escalates them. Certainly battle gear does. So
we've had plenty of practice dealing with it, and Captain Steve Kellums, who joins us every other Monday, lets us know that. He goes, hey, this isn't something new that we're dealing with. This has been part of the when you have a college campus and free thinkers. And again, it's part of what keeps it weird, but we kind of like that weird. And just everybody, if they keep a cool head and shoulders, I think things can get a little bit easier on that. Mick Renheisen's our guest this morning. He's a deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. The other issue that the signs that the city put up, Mick, looked to be, at least from the same report we saw in the Herald Times, 24 of the 28 were removed. I'm not going to ask you who did it or how they did it, but I'm guessing those weren't cheap to make, and they're probably not going to be cheap to replace.
They're about $28 a sign.
Oh, that's not bad. That's, you know, that's less
than that. It's not uncommon in a college town. We don't know who did it, and we hope that whoever did take the signs would respectfully return them. And we don't want to be prosecutorial about this. We just think that, you know, it's a college town. It could be college students. Could be some other entity that did it. But whomever, if you would kindly return our signs, we'd appreciate it. The signs were put there for a reason, to try to help people who are experiencing homelessness that may choose to panhandle. You know the laws. We've talked about aggressive panhandling and what we're trying to stop. We're not trying to stop legal panhandling. We're not trying to stop people in the parks that are behaving as they should be, following the laws. We're trying to rather channel energy and channel donations to the appropriate resources where people can get the most help the most effective way. So that's what those signs were intended to do, was to encourage that. Unfortunately,
somebody's attention.
Somebody
was reading them.
Yeah, somebody took that message maybe differently than I've just described it to you guys, and I hope that they'll return them so we can put them back up. If they don't, we're still going to put them back up. So
buy them in bulk, get a discount.
Yeah,
heavy bulk discount there. So and we know that is steps in the direction of trying to make people aware, trying to get diversions of here's maybe a better way to help. But again, we got to all work together on this. It can't be just a one-man show. And like you mentioned, you just can't throw 10 officers down there every day, and that's not a proper use of resources that are limited, that we know, to fix these problems. So again, let's all hope we can pull together as the team.
Thanks for that reinforced message. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Mick, notwithstanding Mike's weather forecast, the ice rink is about to open.
It's nice to have a little cooler temperature to remind people that it is getting closer to winter.
This is the outdoor ice rink at City Hall, right?
Yeah, exactly. No,
the Farmers Market skating rink? Maybe we should look into that, Mick. We got something going on there.
I don't know if you remember. We used to have one on top of what is now the parking garage.
7th Street?
7th and Morton, which was the Regester garage at the time before the Hilton Hotel went up. But our weather's not very predictable, as you guys know, in the winter, so an outdoor ice arena is a difficult proposition to keep. But our indoor ice arena is predictable, and it is opening this Saturday for public skating. And
excellent.
We actually have some lesson programs that We'd like anybody interested in learning how to ice skate to register by October 20th. You can contact the Parks Department or you can contact the arena at 349-3742. So get your kids out skating. It's that time of year.
You've got activity at the Goat Farm. And before we go too far, explain what the Goat Farm is. And it has nothing to do with the Cubs, right?
No, it doesn't, but that's a good one. The Cubs had a great win that I fell asleep in during during the ninth inning when they scored four runs.
Millions.
Oh, yeah.
But are you a Cub fan?
I am a Cubs fan. I did go to the NLDS game Saturday in Chicago. That was on my bucket list, to go to a Cubs playoff game. First, they have to get in one, right?
There you go.
They did. Second, I had to get tickets. I did, and so that was great. And third, they won 5-2.
And I saw four seats, Game 5 World Series, $75,000 at Wrigley Field.
Whoa. Yeah,
if the Cubs get to the World Series, it might be Armageddon. I'm not sure what it is.
That demand will outweigh the supply greatly.
For sure.
And we'll see economics running. So we have a goat farm.
This is kind of interesting. So the goat farm is the property at Winslow High and Rogers, the intersection there, and goes south and adjoins Sherwood Oaks Park. And it's about a 33-acre tract of land that was donated to the Parks Foundation and is owned now by the city of Bloomington. And it has a large grassy area, and we have been getting some information together, the park staff, about putting some prairie project in, and that basically would mean that we would put native plants and wildflowers that will make up this area of the prairie, and to do that, we have a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service grant and an Indiana Department of Natural Resources grant. So the Parks Department staff want to invite the public to a meeting to discuss this project on Wednesday, October 19th from 6 to 7:30 at Childs Elementary School. And that project will be outlined and discussed with the public at that time.
And Pure Prairie League will be the band featured that night in a concert.
All right, I'm ready to take on the boss here in trivia.
All right, here it is.
I'm ready. I've got my pen out, my coloring book, and my crayon.
What's the topic?
All right, as we discussed last week, it's National Fire Prevention Week. So one of these questions you ought to get if you were paying attention last week. Okay?
You know, I know last one before week. You even ask it, and that is that a smoke alarm is only good for about 10 years.
That was. Well, you know what? And
I didn't know that.
Either did I, and I talked to multiple people that stopped me and said, "That's your smoke alarm expires?" And I said, I thought it was the batteries, too. And
Thanks for
so
that,
that's,
Mick.
That's working in a positive direction because people just, you know, if you've been in your house for 10 or 15 years, you always change the batteries when the clocks fall back or do whatever, but I didn't think the expiration date of the machine was in question.
So that's question one that you both answered correctly.
Yay!
It is every 10 years.
All right. And that was the essay version, too. That wasn't the multiple choice. We showed our work there.
But well done in the blue book, guys.
We studied.
I both give you get an A on that.
I'm left-handed, so I'm left-handed, so I have that stain on on the side of my hand still.
So the second question, since you both got the first one correct, the Bloomington Fire Department recommends replacing batteries on your smoke alarm, A, whenever you feel like it, B, once a year, or C, when it starts chirping to signal the batteries are running low.
I think it's this would be a unlimited multiple choice where it's A, B, C.
Could I get a D?
D, none of the above. E, if it's not, what is it? So I think it's B and C, because if you hear it you want to change it.
I'm going to go F, and that is every time the time changes.
Yeah, we can add that to it. So I would think the more times you try to look at it, the better it would be.
Well, I don't quite know how to grade that. But the answer is B once a year for sure, I would give you C. This is if you're arguing with your professor.
Yeah.
That when it chirps, you've waited a little too long, but at least you're paying attention.
Okay.
So,
exactly right, and you're not hitting it with a hammer at 3 a.m.
That's when it usually starts to chirp.
It always does. How does the battery know when it's dark in the middle of the night? That's technology that should be used for good, not evil.
So both of you are 2-for-2, but the second one's, kind of iffy, but you both got it.
Thank you.
The iffy answers. And so here's the tiebreaker. Can you name the most common cause of house fires? There's 7 options here, so you have to pick the one that is the one that's most frequent here, because you're going to say, well, all of them. But you have to pick the one that's most common.
The most common.
All right. So here are your 7 options. Is it candles? Is it smoking? Is it electrical or lighting problems? Dryers and washing machines? Kids playing with matches and lighters? Christmas trees or cooking?
Which electrical.
I'm going to go with cooking because it happens all the time.
And Keith, did you say electrical?
Yes.
All right. It is not either of those. It is candles.
Really? Who puts candles in
their
house?
They light candles blow them out, or they put them under something.
They fall over.
They fall over.
Knocked down. The cat hits them.
Something hit. That's exactly
damn
right.
Damn cat all those, again.
All those things can contribute to candle fires, and that's the number one cause of house fires.
That is, that's not a Bloomington number. That's a national thing, right?
That is correct.
And I think Bloomington would have be a part of that. We got a big candle community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, hey, by the way, if you would like to schedule an on-site visit or tour of one of our fire stations, our fire chief and our staff would be happy to give you a tour.
Cool.
Five different fire stations. You can contact them at 332-9763.
Well, that's fun. That's, yeah.
Yeah. Good thing. I've done that myself. It is quite informative.
I like to just, when we go downtown to get something to eat, we always park and walk by it so the kids can see the, you know, the fake dog out front. And then I start barking and then scare them. It's great. Dad gets a little peace and quiet out of that, too. Mick, great job as always. We appreciate your time here on a Thursday morning, and we'll do it again next week.
All right, guys. Sounds good.